and welcome to another episode of Lidge Radio Podcast. I'm your host for today, Francesca Stainer, and today we're talking to Kate Usher and Giles Watkins. Now, Kate Usher is a highly experienced menopause and relationships coach, working with women on successful creation, development and growth of personal and career relationships during this period of intense and unpredictable change. She's also author of Your Second Phase, Reclaiming Work and Relationships During and After the Menopause. We'll also be hearing from Giles Watkins. Giles leads Tinderbox Business Consulting in Bristol, Cardiff, Newport and Taunton, offering a personalised and unique service to small and medium-sized enterprises. He works closely with business owners and board directors to develop bespoke and targeted programmes for success. An author, speaker, coach and facilitator, Giles wrote Positive Sleep, based on his own struggles with insomnia, how he overcame these, why sleep matters, and what you can do to sleep better at an individual and organisational level. An accredited Vistage speaker, he now works with individuals and groups, primarily at the C-suite, to gain the positive benefits of improved sleep. Giles is now applying his 30 years of business knowledge and leadership experience, gained primarily in Asia Pacific, Europe and Africa, to enable business decision makers to make better decisions, achieve balance, deliver superior results, and sleep better at night.
And welcome to today's podcast. It's called Why We Sleep is a Menopausal Issue with me, Kate Usher, and Giles Watkin.
Hello, everyone.
Hi. Right then, so we'll just introduce ourselves so you know who we are and why we're here and why we're talking about this. So my name's Kate Usher. I'm a menopause coach and change strategist, and I work with women and organisations to empower them and to create female-friendly workplaces that support women throughout their menopause and beyond.
And I'm Giles Watkins. I am a management consultant, coach and sleep specialist. I work again with individuals and organizations primarily to promote the concept of positive sleep, what sleep can actually bring to you. An awful lot of press about the harm that poor sleep does. I much prefer to focus on the positives, what sleep can bring to you as a leader, and particularly to organizations. So I tend to work with people in the workplace and people currently leading companies, and my book Positive Sleep is all about that and focuses on my own real challenges with insomnia and sleep problems for over a decade and how I address them, and sharing that to hopefully help other people avoid the same sort of pain that I went through.
It's a great book, and as Giles says, it's called Positive Sleep, a Holistic Approach to Resolve Sleep Issues and Transform Your Life. And it's packed full of great tips all the way through. And while we're talking about books, I've got one too, and mine's called Your Second Phase, Reclaiming Work and Relationships During and After Menopause. So our discussion today is obviously about sleep and menopause. And why is it a menopausal issue? Well, sleep is a massive menopausal issue. And for many women, they have slept like a baby all of their life, and I know that was me, until they become perimenopausal. And then they find that either they suffer from night sweats, which wake them up in the middle of the night and they feel incredibly hot and they sweat profusely, and so they throw the covers off, and then because they're more damp, they then get cold, so they're woken up again, and then they have to pull the covers back over them, and so this goes on many times in a night. Or alternatively, there's insomnia, which kind of is a menopausal symptom and affects huge numbers of women. And the knock-on effect of this is that sleep deprivation, which is what it is, because menopausal symptoms don't take a day off, they don't go on holiday, and you can't leave them in a creche somewhere. They're with you night and day for years and years and years. And on average, it's the NHS is saying 4 to 8 years. However, it's more likely that it's in excess of that. And I know I speak to many women who suffer with it in excess of 10 years regularly. So with that in mind, sleep deprivation is highly attritional on women and their abilities to do their work and maintain their relationships. And also what sleep deprivation does is it makes many of your other symptoms much worse. So it aggravates them and it makes them amplified. So with all that in mind, you can see why I'm really excited that we're having this conversation with Giles, who's a sleep guru and knows so much about why we sleep, how we sleep, and how best to sleep. So with all that in mind, there's a lot to worry about as far as sleep is concerned and menopause. And sleep deprivation is damaging for women. And I know that, Giles, that in your book is packed full of all of this. So why should we be concerned with sleep deprivation, especially if you're a woman who's at work in a high-pressure job, pushing for the next level of management or trying to hold up various parts of your life and you want to show up positively in the workplace? So what would you say about what's important here?
Thanks very much, Kate. I think there are some basic pieces that are important to any human, if you like. And then there's the specifics, if you like, of the impact on someone who's in a leadership position, either of a small team or a huge organization. When it comes to us as individuals, and I know this from personal experience as someone whose sleep gradually got worse over a period of more than a decade. I think I mentioned to you on another occasion that I got to the point where I was sleeping only 2.5 to 3 hours a night. And physically I could lug myself around, if you like, and get from A to B, but mentally I was shot. I couldn't think straight. It was like being in a fog all the time that I was awake. And when later I was inspired by my sleep issues to actually start studying the subject, write a thesis about it for my master's at INSEAD and end up writing the book, I found out that while sleep is a relatively new science and discipline, as I said, it's only been around about 100 years, it's critical to enable our bodies and especially our brains to recharge. I think it's fairly obvious what it does for our bodies. We all know we get fatigued as the day goes on. And in fact, the Times today is running some great articles, I think other papers as well, on whether naps are a good idea. And we can focus on that later if you like. But
yeah,
certain points in the day, we do have dips, like the after lunch time. But generally, at the end of the day, our bodies are literally so tired that we just need to lie down and sleep. So we that's a fairly obvious piece. I think what's less obvious and has become much better known in recent years with the expanding discipline of neuroscience is what sleep's actually doing for our brain. Well, one of the things it's doing is restoring energy in the brain. So literally almost like recharging it. Second thing is to reorder and store important information that we've acquired during the day. And I sort of liken that as to literally a new version of your operating system being launched every morning if you've had a proper night's sleep. And that you will have learnt from the previous day's experiences to do so. And there's also evidence to suggest that if you sleep properly, not only do you integrate those memories, but you also decouple some of the emotion that goes with them. That's one of the reasons why people talk about sleeping on things to, you know, come up with not only new ideas and new suggestions, but also feel less bad about episodes that happened the previous day. And I can vouch for that time when I was sleeping 2.5 to 3 hours a night, I was carrying forward every day the stresses of the previous day. So I felt pretty terrible every day for that month-long period, because literally I wasn't decompressing from the previous day's horrors, as it were. And then the third piece, which surprised me particularly when I learned about this, was the development of new brain cells. Which is important, particularly for long-term memory. I was sort of the opinion we started life, if you like, with a finite number of brain cells, and they just got less and less as the as the years went on. But no, we actually develop new brain cells when we sleep as well. So those are three particular areas that support the brain. And as I said, most of us, from our own experience, just know that the body needs sleep to recharge. The other point, I think, really around health generally at the high level is that just about every health ailment you have can be improved by sleep. When I, again, researched the subject for my master's, I found that between 75 and 85 ailments were linked to poor sleep, which when I read the list, as far as I could see, and I'm not a doctor, but from my basic knowledge, seemed to be just about everything. You know, so when people say to you, so how can sleep benefit you? And I said, well, in just about every way that you can think imaginable in terms of your health. And that's why I particularly like promoting the idea of positive sleep, because the reverse works. If you start to sleep better, just about every aspect of your life can improve. It's free, and literally it can change overnight. If you've been someone who's been a terribly poor sleeper, and I mean you've experienced probably even more extreme problems than I have, Kate, from what the discussions we've had, you can turn that around with a good 7 or 8 hours of solid sleep. You'll wake up the next day and feel a completely different human being.
Yeah, I think on that point, so just to fill the listeners in, I had 4 years of night sweats and insomnia, and I probably in that 4 years got 5 nights of solid sleep. And I was being woken up by night sweats because of the hot and cold pairing, maybe 10 times a night. I had young children at the time. They were equally waking me up in the night. And also I suffered from insomnia. So I'd go to bed and I'd be staring at the ceiling for hours. And that's never a nice place to be. So I'm really interested in this decoupling the emotion piece, because menopausal women suffer from anxiety and panic attacks and mood swings. So they're swinging from tears to shouting all the time. And that oscillation is going on all day. And it's very difficult for women to manage the fallout of that. So then feeling guilty and embarrassed and everything else, and to deal with that rationally if they're then not getting sleep. So you're starting to see how sleep is so important to everything. It then starts to link its way out across so many things. And I know we'll be discussing that further as we go through it.
Yeah. I think those are the main pieces to emphasize when it comes to the physical and the mental. One other thing I would just mention before we move more into the whole area of the impact of sleep issues, and that's both particularly from a pure sleep angle and from a menopausal angle as well, is what determines when we sleep. Because there are two key factors. A lot of people don't understand that there are two main factors that determine when you sleep. One is the body clock, the circadian clock, the circadian rhythm that lots of people have heard of. Approximately 8 hours are required for every 24, based on, again, experiments that have been done and research that's highlighted that rhythm. The role of melatonin in that's effectively the green light to sleep, and that's why sometimes people start talking about using melatonin as potentially a way to support your sleep if you're having problems. And I think it's an option when used under medical direction, because the amount in different melatonin tablets and so forth can vary and so forth. But I think, you know, certain people like stewards and people working in the airline industry have found it to be an option. That circadian rhythm and clock is working in parallel with the release of the chemical in the brain called adenosine, which creates the pressure to sleep. So that's literally like a sleep pressure chemical produced every minute that you're awake, from the moment you wake up in the morning to the time you go to sleep at night. Now, the issue with adenosine is it's a great regular drip, if you like, of pressure to sleep, However, it's completely blanked out by caffeine. Ooh. And I'm going to talk a little bit about caffeine later as well. But that's where the intake of caffeine, how much caffeine you have and when you have it, you really need to think about it if you're having sleep problems, because almost certainly there's some interference with the sleep pressure being built up, and that's another reason why you might have a problem. I think the last thing to say on that is, people, when they hear about this, they often say to me, but I'm a natural lark, or I'm an owl, or I'm not sure whether I'm a lark or an owl, and so forth. And some fantastic research has just been published in Finland last week on the subject, which shows that based on their sampling, and this sounds about right from what I'm hearing, that 90% of us are either larks or who prefer the morning, or are kind of in the middle between larks and owls, so reasonably well balanced. And only 10% of us are night owls, real night owls. However, if you are a night owl, and that's a really strong genetic disposition, and these are genetic distributions, so these are genetic fates, not conscious faults, right? But let's be very clear, you're born like this. If you are a night owl, the way society is structured is to people who are stronger in the morning than the evening. And as a result, this can really lead to concerns and manifest itself in anxiety, depression, also, you know, not being as well regarded at work, etc., etc., just because of your genetic fate rather than anything else. So I hope that in a post-COVID world, when it would be good to think that many organizations are becoming a little bit more flexible about the way people work and realize that they can still get productive people without being as 9-to-5 as they were, I hope that bosses start to cut a bit more slack to people who are self-confessed owls, and also that people start to really think about when they work at their best.
Yeah,
I think it's a two-way street. It's not all on the bosses and it's not all on the employees. It's got to be a dialogue between the two.
Yeah. So for those of us in the middle and the larks, society is basically structured for us. It's the 90% we're the majority, and 10% who are night owls, then it's actually quite a tough time. I wonder if all DJs are night owls.
you think actors, DJs, people that typically perform at night, I'm massively the opposite. And in fact, I think that for me, if I could work from sort of 6 till 12 and take about 4 hours off and then do 2 or 3 hours before dinner, obviously sort of Spanish style, but even longer siesta period, I would probably be at my most productive. And sometimes I actually do that because that just works for me. But the key thing is to try and I think particularly when you're on holiday or when you don't use an alarm clock, or when you just allow yourself to sleep when you want to and get up when you want to, most people, that's one way they can start to get a sense of where their natural rhythms are. So actually when they're on holiday, you get some people that do want to sleep a bit later, but other people that tell you that they'll bounce at, gosh, when I'm on holiday, I want to get up really early. And actually probably their natural...
Get as much done as possible.
Yeah, their natural state, as it were, their natural rhythm.
Okay, so thinking about the impact of this, I mean, you've touched on it throughout that, but what's the deeper impact of this?
Well, I think we've touched a bit on the impact from a physical point of view, and we've touched a bit on the impact from a sort of a basic brain point of view. I think the impact I'd like to most focus on at the moment is particularly with regard to leadership, whether you are, if you like, a team leader or someone who owns a business or someone in a senior position in an organization of any sort, really. And this goes for profit, not for profit, doesn't really, state, private, doesn't really matter, any sort of organization, is that there will be at least 4 qualities that are supported by good sleep. And as I said before, it sort of immediately reverses if you don't sleep well. One is the ability to be results orientated. And to be a really good results orientated leader, you have to have what I used to call in my youth when I worked for Shell, what's sometimes called a great helicopter quality. In other words, you've got to be able to go in and focus on the minutiae and really have a laser-like view of certain challenging things. And yet you need to be able to come right up and have the helicopter view, the wider view of the terrain. So it's that ability to stay focused on the big picture as well as go down and look at the detail that really defines a good leader. Now, that's tough to do if you're not sleeping properly. And scientists have shown that people that sleep only, say, 4 hours a day are basically officially drunk.
Wow.
That corresponds to a level of performance and focus that would be similar to someone who has, you know, an illegal level of alcohol within their blood. Now, most of us wouldn't go to work deliberately drunk.
No.
Maybe after the odd office Christmas party in the old days, you might be a little bit the worse for wear the next day, but mostly not. Yet people frequently will go to work on 4 hours sleep or less.
Yeah.
And it's effectively equivalent. So the first one is that results orientation that it's not just a business leader that needs that. Most people in business need that, whether they're in a leadership position or not. The next one is around solving problems effectively. Now, if you've had a good night's sleep, you'll spot the shortcuts and your ability to see patterns, see shortcuts, think, oh, I've seen something like that a little bit before, and hopefully not leap to conclusions, but actually help inform your ability to solve problems relatively smartly, will be sharpened, will be heightened. And this is often also, somewhat controversial figure, and he certainly hasn't got everything right the last year or so, but Boris Johnson, it's recently been revealed that he's become a great fan of the afternoon nap, which of course Winston Churchill was as well, his great hero. But there's a lot of research to suggest that a quick nap after lunch will really help your problem-solving abilities. If you've got to work on a spreadsheet later in the day, or you know, really sort of numerical and technical stuff, if you're feeling a bit tired, honestly, 20 to 30 minutes nap, it's going to make a huge difference, a huge positive. And NASA's research on naps, which they did for astronauts in the 60s and 70s, suggested an optimum nap time of 26 minutes. Now, I've always been suspicious that whoever came up with that was an attention-seeking scientist who didn't want to put 25 minutes. They thought, if we put 26 minutes, it's going to capture people's attention more or something. But basically, for someone like me that can sleep very quickly when he puts his head on the pillow, if I put the alarm on for half an hour and I go and lie down, I'll get approximately 25 minutes. The third key quality for anyone at work, really, is seeking different perspectives. And this is very, very important for leaders particularly, but we'll all benefit if we're trying to solve a problem from getting other viewpoints. And I remember, to my bitter shame really, that when I was CEO of a business in Sri Lanka for 4 years, up till about 2014, I had a member of my management team that would always come in after the end of the management meeting and say, oh, and by the way, Giles, I've just thought of something we should consider on that particular problem. And I would regularly show him the door because I was so sleep deprived, I couldn't possibly take in any. We just got through the whole afternoon session management meeting, the annual meeting or whatever, and the monthly meeting. And I think the last thing I need is this bloke coming in and giving me some fresh ideas. The truth is, of course, he was a reflective thinker. And things would percolate through the meeting. And then at the end of it, he'd suddenly think, I know, this would be a great idea. And my inability to seek a different perspective from him was meaning that we didn't solve problems as a leadership team as effectively as we might have done, which is pretty, you know, embarrassing looking back on it. You know, these mental capacities for learning and the willingness to learn and the memory and decision-making all required for good quality thinking is really critical to avoiding tunnel vision and bias.
Yeah.
And that's what I was suffering from by not taking into account his perspective. It would be far better to say to him, look, I'm too tired now. Can you just drop me an email with those points on and I'll sleep on it. And tomorrow morning, let's have a discussion or something like that. That would have been a much better way to say, okay, we've decided this, but is there something new, some new insight that he's given me that I can integrate that into? If I couldn't have sort of coped with it at that point, but I was not so wise.
No, and that's, I think that very humble admission there is incredibly interesting in a world that is recognizing that diversity is of incredible value.
Yeah.
On many levels, and obviously a more gender diverse world is advantageous, and many studies have proved that. So it's really important that leaders recognize that they are pivotal in enabling those creative points, or those points of which those people can enter into the conversation.
Really. Absolutely, yeah. No, very much so. And that sort of then builds then into the last of the four I wanted to mention, which is in terms of positive qualities for leaders, which is your ability to support others. Your emotional reactions and your ability to build relationships in a trusted basis with others will both benefit from a good night's sleep. And they're key to your ability to support the teams you work with and understand what is going on with them. Because to do that, you need to understand, as I said, you need to understand them to be able to help them. And the way you understand someone is by listening to them. And as you well know, Kate, you listen to people, not just to what they say, how they say it, and their body language as they're doing so. Yeah. The non-verbal cues are as important, if not more important, than the words. And the how they say it is probably more important than what they say. And facial expressions and tones are all part of that overall communication platform. And the research suggests that when we are sleep deprived, we're much more likely to misread these signals and overreact to those signals as well, and often to be more negative. And what this shows is that those around us start to trust us less as a result and are less engaged with us. And I often think, you know, if you think about the millions of pounds that are spent on employee engagement initiatives, just in this country alone, let alone other parts of the world. Most of that could be saved, or a fraction of it could have been spent on sleep education and actually encouraging and setting a culture that promotes sleep, organisations would be far better off, because an awful lot of the employee engagement problems could be solved by leaders sleeping better.
I mean, I don't disagree with you, not in any way at all. There's so much to be said about the culture of organisations where, and I know you say this in your book, where it's almost a macho thing where people say, oh yeah, I only need a few hours sleep and then I get up and, you know, I run half a marathon and then I get all my emails done for the day and then I'm hyper on it. And it's almost, you're trying to...
Not even 9 o'clock, is it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then I might have a muesli bar. So it's a level of macho behaviour which is unsustainable, absolutely
completely.
Unsustainable.
Yeah, completely.
But if you put that inside the menopause, it's every single one of those points is so applicable. And I know from my own experience, your ability to keep a sensible view on what's going on is diminished considerably, and the smallest thing can kick you off. Now, if you add that to the anger that comes with menopause and the mood swings that come with menopause and the panic attacks that come with menopause, and then the associated loss of memory, so loss of verbal recall, all of those things, what you're doing is you're increasing the stress levels as you're going through this, and they're climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing. And without sleep, you're never going to bring them down. And it's almost like the last insult that you just can't seem to lie down and go to sleep at the end of the day. Yeah, the problem is, in any organization, as you touched on for the last point there, in relationships, and I talk a lot about this, there's multiple layers of relationships, and even the ones that you don't think about. So the guy who works, who makes your coffee in the morning, or your cup of tea as you walk in at, you know, the tea point, and there's the people in the post room, there's the people in the departments that you don't speak to very much. All of those create a web of relationships that your success is dependent upon. And it only takes a few instances of you shouting your head off because you're stressed, you've got various menopausal responses going on, and you haven't slept properly for the last 2 years. All of that is amplifying everything that it can start to be detrimental to your career and to your abilities inside the workplace.
Absolutely.
They're so interconnected. It's got its hooks right into you, quite frankly.
Yeah, no, without question. So the more we can help people understand how to sleep better and what are the ways to go about it, the better. Because it's a life-changing benefit once you can.
Absolutely. So with that, let's move on. So what can we do to gain sleep control?
Thanks, Kate. Well, there's lots that we can do, and that's the good news. And my experience is that 80% of people can dramatically improve their sleep by doing one or more of the following things. So what I'm going to talk about is a menu of things you can do to improve your sleep, and people should treat it as a menu to be picked from, not eat the whole thing. And actually, if one thing doesn't seem to be working after 30 days or more of trying it, try something else. First thing is to address your caffeine intake. Caffeine has a half-life of 6 hours. That means if you have a cup of coffee at noon, half of it will still be in your system at 6 p.m. and a quarter of it in your system at midnight. As we mentioned before, caffeine stunts the production of adenosine, the sleep pressure produced by the chemical in your brain, and will have a dramatic effect for most people on their sleep patterns. I was a 7 espressos a day person until 6 years ago. I gave up caffeine completely. I don't recommend that because it's so painful to do. I do recommend, however, people start to take their caffeine in only before lunchtime, and that they start to think about how they could reduce it. And it goes for black tea, green tea. A lot of people don't realize how much caffeine is there in green tea, as well as coffee, other sports drinks, and after you research it, many other products as well.
Yeah, I think coffee is one of my biggest issues. And when I first started my perimenopause, I spoke to a naturopath and they said, you're going to have to cut the coffee out. And that was agony. I went down from about 5 or 6 coffees down to about 2. And I mean, there's lots of issues with caffeine, just as you were saying about how long it stays in your system, which is astonishing. But also it dehydrates your body. And if you're having hot flushes, which is equally dehydrating your body, the impact of that is like a double whammy. And by the same token, because you're not hydrating your body, you're passing around old hormones and you need to drink lots and lots of water to flush it out.
Yeah, so caffeine is a major area to address for most people. Coupled with that probably is consumption of alcohol. A lot of people think that alcohol can help you sleep. Now, that's a misnomer. Alcohol makes you drowsy. It's a sedative. So it can put you to sleep, but it's unlikely to keep you asleep, partly because you'll need to wake up in the middle of the night, have a pee probably because you've taken on all this alcohol, but also it does disrupt your general sleep pattern. So the best tip I can give people is, and I enjoy a glass of wine like anybody else, is to drink earlier in the evening, or like 6-7 o'clock, if you go to bed at say 10 or 11, and watch what you drink. You know, I'm afraid the boring medical advice about a couple of units a night, no more than, makes sense. And it makes sense when it comes to sleep as well.
Yeah, and I when you told me earlier that it was a sedative and it didn't keep you asleep, I mean, so many of us must have experienced that. And one of the other issues with alcohol is it affects the absorption of vitamin D, which then affects your bones. And osteoporosis is a very big issue for menopausal women. So it has multiple impacts on you as you get older. And also women are more prone to heart disease as they get past their menopause than men are. And therefore, alcohol has an impact on that as well.
Yeah, so it is a, I guess, a bit of a silent killer if not properly addressed in terms of consumption. Absolutely. Another thing that's been very well publicised is blue light, the emission of blue light from laptops, desktops, iPhones, iPads, other manufacturers' phones and tools, tablets are available, of course, and all those different devices. You know, they all emit blue light. Interestingly, Kindles don't, and televisions do, but mostly are quite a long way from us, especially when we've got these large screen TVs. And not such a problem when it comes to light. But these blue lights, if not checked in some way, and you see people wearing blue light glasses and using lots of dimmers on their devices, but generally these blue lights stunt the production of melatonin and keep us awake at night. Okay, so putting the screen away, ideally an hour and a half, at least an hour, if not an hour and a half before you want to go to sleep, is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, this was something I had to come to terms with. If I look at my phone, which is my usual sort of access point to blue light late at night, if I look at my phone within an hour of sleep, that's it. It's done. I don't sleep.
You write about that very well in your book. You make point very well. And that's key. Linked to that is sleep hygiene. I like to think leaving the blue lights, if you like, alone for the last hour and a half before you go to bed, and similarly avoiding it in the morning, because our brains are quite slow in coming to terms with the morning. They're a bit like an old car engine, someone's describing to me. And we also are still processing things from overnight, which is often why we get ideas in the shower in the morning. They're sort of ideas that were percolating in the brain during the night that are finally filtering through. There's a strong argument for leaving an hour or so before you go to bed and also first thing in the morning to non-work activities, which I call bookending your night. It's my way of sort of describing it. And that becomes a positive sleep habit if you get into it and can practice it regularly. And that then links into other good sleep hygiene disciplines, like, you know, having a room that is dark, having it at the right sort of temperature, not too hot and not too cold, probably. And actually having a room that's free of distractions and means of keeping you awake. A room that is actually set up for sleep is a really good idea. It makes a big difference to a lot of people when they declutter their room. There are a number of people that say to me, but how will I get up in the morning if I don't have an alarm, because the alarm's on my phone? Well, you know, there is something called the alarm clock that was a fantastic 20th century invention. And if you don't like that, do what I've done, because on the rare occasions I need an alarm call these days, I have a digital radio that sets off, you know, some soothing music at 6:30 in the morning, and actually gradually raises. And so you actually, if you are going to be woken up, you're woken up in a nice, gentle way. But keeping things like that, think about the environment that will give you optimum sleep. That to me is what sleep hygiene is all about.
Yeah, I think most modern smartphones now enable you to put bedtime on. So that means it turns all notifications off completely. And if you absolutely need a more aggressive awakening, like I do, I can sleep through most things at that time of the day. If you do need that, put the nighttime on your phone and it will wake you. Nothing will happen until your alarm comes on and you will not be woken in the night. So I think just using the facilities that you have is so important. And I think the temperature in the room, that's really important as well. I know that one lady that was on a course that I was running, a workshop, she was saying that she couldn't work out when she was a child why her dad wore a woolly hat in bed, and it was because her mum had the room, all the windows wide open, even in the middle of winter, because she was so hot. And so her dad had to actually dress like he was outside in order to get to sleep. But yeah, so I think having a room at a temperature that enables you to go to sleep is very important.
Yeah. A couple more tips, if I may, Kate. One is the consumption of magnesium. Our bodies don't automatically produce magnesium. It's a very beneficial element, I think it's best to describe it, for us. Broccoli is rich in magnesium. One of the reasons why it's regarded as a superfood is for that reason. My understanding is magnesium is best taken in through the skin. So sprays can be very helpful, and Epsom salt baths. There probably are other salt baths that contain a high in magnesium, but that's one I know particularly. And magnesium tablets are available as well. But most of us are magnesium deficient. So finding ways to up our magnesium intake, often people will then say, gosh, I've started to sleep better.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you. And I always recommend that women take the sprays. I know that I use the sprays. I think they're fantastic. I don't have baths, but there are women who love baths, and that's fantastic. But magnesium also creates an enzyme that enables you to pass the vitamin D into your bones. And again, so that is amazing for your osteoporosis prevention, or at least lessening. So I think magnesium is a fantastic mineral.
And a last one to support that is a mindfulness technique. I mean, so many people say to me, I wake up at 3 a.m. and cannot get back to sleep. And equally, you've talked earlier about lying there shattered at night, but not being able to get to sleep during the menopause, despite the fact you were tired. So what can you do to get to sleep? Well, one thing you can do, which really helps millions of people that are aware of it, and I really wish it was almost taught in schools, this one, really, it's that fundamental, is a basic mindfulness technique called body scanning, which you can do lying next to somebody in bed. They don't even need to know that, you know, you're doing this. So it's not something that's intrusive to those that have a sleeping partner. You literally lie there and you scan your body from your head to your toe, or from your toes to your head, depending on, it doesn't matter which direction you go in, okay? And I combine this body of scanning technique with gratefulness. So I actually, as I stop at each station, if you were, along the body, from the toe to the top of the arch, to the ankle, to the heel, to the, you know, gradually going up the body like that, I would spend about 5 seconds on each part of the body, and I would say, thank you very much for what you've done for me today, or particularly acknowledge the role that that particular part of the body plays in your activity. What you will find is if you do that, breathing just rhythmically and just calmly, belly breathing preferably, you very rarely do more than 2 or 3 cycles. Because you'll either have got yourself into a very meditative, almost trance-like state, even though you're not asleep. I can remember that a few times in my most stressed times. It wouldn't get me to sleep, but it gets me to a good place. Or you've just gone off to sleep immediately.
And I think mindfulness is fantastic. And that's that. Was it body scanning? I think is so brilliant. And it's so important that you actually piece by piece by piece go along through your body in the true sense of mindfulness. So being extremely present just in that single point. And I think that's incredibly useful. All of those points are things that people can do today, that things that people can change today, that they can work on today. And I know at the beginning you said it was a menu, and you know, they are things that people can just pick up and start to implement in order to change their experience and to lessen their sleep deprivation. And I think that, you know, the the talk today, we've covered so many important points there. And I think just going up through that, how the sleep deprivation impacts us, and especially in the work environment, our focus and our ability to see the bigger picture and the other people's points of view, and our ability to listen and develop relationships and nurture those relationships within the workplace. And those relationships are all so important, especially for women who are trying to make it into the top slot for their into the exec teams and senior management and seat in the C-suite. They're incredibly, incredibly important. And I think that the three points that you made at the beginning there about recharging and decoupling emotion and the development of brain cells, that was so important. I hadn't even thought about that, just outside of what it does for your body. And I think that keeping those things in mind, the next time you reach for that glass of wine or the coffee, the seventh coffee of the day, which maybe I might have done sometimes, it's something you can kind of remind yourself of, that this is why I'm doing this. This is why I'm saying no to that.
Sure.
So if there are any questions that you might have or additional information that you might like, there are, as we said at the beginning, we both have a book. Giles is called Positive Sleep: A Holistic Approach to Resolve Sleep Issues and Transform Your Life. It's such an amazing handy guide. It's sort of pocket size, really, and it's packed full of tips and information. And my own is Your Second Phase: Reclaiming Work and Relationships During and After the Menopause. And that takes you through the whole of your menopause, both for yourself, at work and at home, and if you're single, dating. So before we go, Giles, have you got anything further to add?
No, it's been a real pleasure, Kate. I think, like many men, I am less well informed about the menopause than I might be. So I'm glad to say at the end of this session, I feel more informed and I'm more aware of the issues and challenges of women, particularly in sort of the 45 to 55 bracket. That I might be dealing with from a work situation. And yes, just to say to anyone, if they want to contact me, the best way is normally via LinkedIn. I love getting messages about people's sleep challenges and success stories and so forth. So I'm always happy to chat with people that way about it. If they want to read the book, if they just want to pick up on something that's resonated with them, I'd love to hear from them.
Fantastic. Yes, likewise, LinkedIn. I've also got a YouTube channel, Kate Usher, the Menopause Coach. You can find us, I'm sure that's Kate Usher and Giles Watkins. So thank you very much for listening and have a good day.
Thank you so much to Kate Usher and Giles Watkins. Do remember to keep an eye on our social media, at Lib Publishing on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and at Lib Business Media on LinkedIn. We'll be sharing more podcasts by experts such as Kate and Giles, and other books and thought leadership pieces as well. So thanks for listening, and see you next time on Lib Radio Podcast.